thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of Java with Josh. I'm your host, legislator Josh Lafazan. Today we have a really exciting show with certified personal trainer Zandra Fitt joining us. As we say every week, having big dreams is common, but figuring out how to achieve those dreams is rare. On this show, we interview some truly incredible people to share their journeys to success and give you the tools to reach your dreams. So grab your cup of Java and let's go. Zandra, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Josh. I'm so happy to be here.
So we're thrilled to have you here on Java with Josh. I'm a huge fan of yours. You are just super inspiring. 87,000 followers on Instagram, so I'm not the only one who believes it. But for our followers who are meeting you for the first time, Zandra Fitt, again, with over 87,000 followers on Instagram, is an AAAI ISMA certified personal trainer with a passion for culinary and pastry arts. We're going to talk about that. Practicing what she preaches, Zandra combines her athletic and culinary expertise in her holistic approach to fitness. Focused on mindfulness, building overall strength and functionality, Zandra blends her dance foundation with MMA training methods and nutrient-dense meal plans. So there's a lot to unpack here, but let's start with this. How did you don't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to be, you know, fit famous. Like, how did you start?
All right. So I've always been very active. I was a dancer all my life, but I wasn't the best dancer because I had a lot of body image issues and I didn't like looking in the mirror. But I was always very active. So I danced from the age of 10 to 19. And then once I was 19, I missed, you know, being active like that. So I joined Lucille Roberts. I joined a bunch of gyms and started taking a lot of fitness classes. So that was kind of how my love for fitness got started. With Instagram, which came along in about 2010, I want to say the Instagram platform was out and kind of creating a buzz. I was working with a mixed media artist at the time. So I've done a lot of different jobs in my life. I've like tried everything. So at the time I was working with a mixed media artist who did a lot of airbrush work from like big murals to body painting to things like that. So for his business, we were just kind of like, you know, he did really good work. So we wanted to get him more exposure. So I was like, you know what, the Instagram platform is perfect. Like, I'm going to start building this for you. And it kind of just went from there. And I just got very passionate. I always loved taking photos and things like that. But I started kind of seeing it as a vehicle for other creatives. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't until I got a little bit older and I started really diving into fitness and things like that, that I kind of transformed my platform into a fitness focused one.
I love it. And I have to follow up because everyone tells me, Josh, I'd love to, you know, grow my following on social media. So 87,000 didn't happen overnight. Like, was it just constant content? Like, how did you build that following?
A lot of consistency, you know, being consistent is the most important thing, I think, with anything in life. So being consistent with your posts, and now that there's so many more features, you have a lot more of ability to do that. Even if you don't have a post, you could post on your story. And also I found a lot of, you know, common interest is a big one. You find people who have the same hobbies as you and you connect with them and go from there.
I love that. I will tell you, you know, if you want to share some of the 87,000 over to my my 3,700, I'll take some. But
absolutely.
I think what you spoke about is important. So I try to weave in life lessons for, you know, especially our young listeners here. And one of them is consistency, right? So you had a vision for where you're going and you woke up every day and you said, you know, I'm going to pay homage to that vision. Take us through what a day-to-day looks like. Because I know you're busy because I follow you, but what is a day-to-day, you know, pre-COVID or post-COVID, but what does a day-to-day look like?
So, yeah. And to touch on that too, like for young listeners, because it is really important for me to connect with, you know, young girls and boys and everything like that and be a good role model. I didn't always have this vision that it would be fitness. Mm-hmm. I knew that there's power in numbers and that one day, you know, because people always told me like, you're obsessed with social media. Like, why are you doing this? Why are you posting all the time? This is back, you know, 10 years ago. But just to, if you feel strongly about something and passionate about something that nobody else sees, like stick to it and keep going, because you could be building something that you might not even know what the end result is yet. and you're still, you know, gaining momentum, and then that vision will kind of come to light. So that's just a little side note for me, but yeah, day to day now that we're in COVID is a lot different. So I wake up, usually I wake up at about 6 a.m. I'm like, that's my permanent alarm clock is 6 a.m. I just, my eyes open and I'm like, all right, what's going on? And I'll do one of two things. I'll either check my emails, or I will listen to an audiobook or something that's going to kind of ground me for the day. So recently I've been listening to an audiobook that's all about female physiology. So things that, you know, I can share with my audience, and just kind of something that's a little bit, you know, listening to an audiobook is very calming. So that's a cool thing. Or I check my email in case, you know, busy work. After that, I usually make my breakfast. I have my little aminos. I'm really big on aminos and supplements. I don't know. Some people aren't too into supplements, but I love my supplements. So I have my aminos, and then I kind of go into my my workout for the day. So whatever that is, since COVID has, you know, kind of changed life for everyone, I became a long distance runner, an endurance athlete.
A long distance runner.
So my run I'll do usually before 1 o'clock, I'll get like anywhere from 5 to 8 or 9 miles in for the day. And then I'll start working more on social media. Social media is something that I kind of just do constantly throughout the day, no matter what I'm doing. So that's always like a constant throughout my day. I also work on another platform. I manage some platforms as well. So I hop on there too. Then I have my lunch, and then I kind of get into training my clients at night. So I have probably from 4 p.m. to 8 p.m., 9 p.m., I'm training clients.
Wow. All right. So a busy day, obviously. I mean, you know, you're probably one of the most driven people I know. I want to talk about so much there, but I want to unpack the importance of mindfulness and mental health, because you do so much. You're running around, and I feel like everyone always feels like, oh, you know, I don't have a second to breathe. So when do you make time in that day for you? And is it the audiobook? Like, when during that day, you know, is your time where you're clearing your head and you're focusing on what's upstairs?
The audiobook, yeah, but more when I'm out of my house, because I've literally, you know, we've all been cooped up in our homes for the past year. So running became like a very like freeing thing that I do. And that was what kind of started me with the mindfulness. And when I run, because I always hated running, it was never something that was easy for me, I started saying to myself, I say 5 affirmations to myself when I run. So if I get out there and I'm like on the first mile and I'm like, oh, and I start having feelings of like, I don't want to do this anymore. Like, oh, it's too cold. It's too hot. My legs hurt. I immediately, as soon as those negative thoughts arise, I start saying to myself my affirmations, and I just repeat them over and over and over again. And I say each one of them 10 times. And then if I'm still feeling like, oh, I want to quit, I'll just keep saying them to myself. And then before you know it, the run's over and I feel better and I'm connecting with the universe and putting out my vision. And I've noticed a big change in my mental health since I started doing that. You know, you have to talk positive to yourself. That's a big part of, I get people asking me all the time, like, how do you stay motivated? How do you stay dedicated? How do you stay committed? I waited my whole life for someone to like, oh yeah, like let's, no one's going to come along. No one's going to help you. Like, you have to talk nice to yourself. You have to motivate yourself. You have to commit to yourself and really just make you a priority. No matter how, some people tell me that feels selfish, but you can't give the best version of yourself to the world if you're not taking the time for yourself to develop yourself. So that's when I do that, my runs, because it's also killing 2 birds with 1 stone. The more time I can save, the better.
No, I and you need it, obviously. So on this show, so I always try to write down tidbits of knowledge that our guests give us. And what you just said, that, you know, you have to talk nice to yourself, I think is really profound, in that if we're not kind to ourselves, especially during a pandemic, then what are we going to be? And I think that parlays pretty much into my next question, in terms of feeling good about oneself in order to be the best version of oneself. So, you know, I have a ton of young interns, and you know, I asked them to do research on issues they felt were prevalent in the community. And you know, body image and you know, especially in the rise of Snapchat filters, right? You can throw on a filter and you could look very different than in real life, or mm-hmm. Instagram, and the pressures for young people, specifically young girls, to look a certain way. Was fitness, you know, your antidote to those issues? And you know, what I find so profound is so many of my friends who are in fitness entered fitness, you know, because of those body image issues and are able to take control of their own life. So I'd love to hear your story there.
Absolutely. So that is something that I feel I connect with very deeply, because like I started saying, I was a dancer for 10 years and I never looked in a mirror. So, you know, that says a lot. If you're a dancer, you have to look in the mirror. You have to be comfortable with what you look like. So I was told by a dance teacher of mine that I was too heavy. That was why I was in the back. Granted, I was 10 years old, you know? So something like that can be said to a little girl, and just casually adults say that stuff and it just sticks forever. And, you know, that just really had me in a bad place. I remember being on diets when I was like 10 years old after that. It was just something that, it's kind of crazy how it kind of continued to spiral. And now where I'm at, I feel so empowered with fitness. It was in the beginning, I was kind of using fitness to like, oh, I got to lose all this weight. Like I have to do this, I have to do that. Now I actually suffered an injury. So I suffered an injury when I dislocated my knee twice when I was in my early 20s. And that shifted my whole, disordered eating. It shifted everything, because I had, you know, eating disorders. I had everything that all young girls are going through right now. Like I experienced it, whether it was drugs and alcohol, eating, whatever it was. And that injury that I got, that dislocation of the knee, really made me sit with myself and think about my body differently and think about how badly I'd been abusing my body and how mean I'd been talking to myself for all those years. Because now guess what? I'm on a couch for 6-7 months. And that's also how my Instagram started to grow. So I get stuck on the couch, my knee's dislocated. I'm living by myself I was living in Franklin Square at the time. And I'm just like, oh my God, what am I gonna do? I'm gonna get fat. Like I can't work out. I can't do anything. So I just started training different. I started building my Instagram from there, but I started really training for strength and everything internal, because if you don't have a strong core, and hey, the best example of this is like boxing. Like you could see two guys boxing and they're the same weight class, and one guy is like ripped and the other guy looks like, you know, he was just eating cake. And you're like, how can these two be fighting each other? Like they don't even look like, and it's because the guy who doesn't look that in shape, it's genetics, but he also has a strong core. So that alone, just like getting that very hard slap in the face from life of like, you can't keep going this way. You can't keep destroying your body. You can't keep this disordered eating. Like you can't keep just working out because of what the Victoria's Secret models look like or what all these other girls, you have to do it because you're going to age and you want to be strong inside from the inside out. And so that's something that I really try to make an example of for young people who have all these issues now with all this social media and all these filters and everything, is like, just focus on getting strong from the inside out and don't make it about an aesthetic. Make it about the internal, so that you don't get injuries and you don't have to go through what I went through and learn so the hard way.
Well, listen, I got to tell you, I am so appreciative that you're willing to share your story. I talk on the show about what I call reciprocal vulnerability, which is that oftentimes so many of our relationships in life are superficial. How's the weather? How you doing? Good. When somebody has the courage to get below the surface and be vulnerable with somebody else, oftentimes it allows somebody else the courage to be vulnerable back. But somebody's got to be first. And so for mm-hmm. you to be able to be first and to use your platform for good, really is remarkable. So I want to segue into my next question. Like, you know, you do so much here. How did you develop all these disparate interests? And B, what is it like to now be a role model for so many people? So let's start with, let's start with B, because then I want to transition into hearing about you cook. So I want to hear, you know, what's it like to be a role model for so many people now?
I mean, it makes me happy to be able to help people. So I've always known that I've went through all the pain in my life for a reason and that I had to turn it into good. So it makes me very happy to be able to to even be considered a role model to anyone. You know, just if me sharing my story can help anyone and they want to consider me a role model, that's, I'm flattered by that, you know, but I don't really think about that too often because it kind of can add some pressure.
Well, I'll tell you, I appreciate how you use your platform for good and how, you know, again, I've met you recently, but I can see the humility that you have that, you know, gaining that notoriety hasn't changed you. So I hope it never does. And I appreciate so much that you do have that humility. But I got to ask, so you do literally everything. You're a jack of all trades here. Let's start with the cooking. How did you get, because you said you're passionate about cooking. I think it was cooking pastries. How did you get into cooking? Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that would be my grandma. I come from a Sicilian Italian family. So we grew up around the dinner table, food, tremendous amounts of food for every holiday. And I spent a lot of time with my grandma growing up. So she was always cooking. And I remember I started baking. My mom like tells a story. Oh, you were pulling out ingredients when you were four. So like, I've just always loved it. I've just always, you know, food's a big part of my life. And I've always been passionate about it. It's a way for me to relax, but it's also a way for me to be creative. So that's why I love cooking and baking just as equal. They're two different things. Baking is definitely a science. You know, you can't be too creative with baking until it comes to like the decorating part and like how you're going to make your cookies. But the baking, the recipes is a science. Regular cooking is like, you know, I can switch things up. I can play around with recipes. I really got into like vegan and gluten-free cooking. That was fun for me, especially being Italian. I'm like, how many ways can I like change things so that they taste good and like I'm eating healthy? So that was kind of how that started.
Well, and let me ask you too, because, you know, for me, it's tough. Everyone knows from my Instagram, Taco Bell and McDonald's are probably the top of the food pyramid for me. I know I got to cut that, but so much of the battle when it comes to fitness is eating, right? So, you know, with your clients, how much of your guidance to your clients is about eating and how much of it is, I'm just going to go to the gym and run on the treadmill for 6 hours versus I'm going to have a meal plan. Like, you know, where do you fall in that kind of debate?
I think they go hand in hand, you know, and it also is dependent on what the client wants. I don't ever want to overwhelm anyone and be like, you know, you need to eat this, you need to eat that. If people just want to train with me to build strength and they're not trying to lose weight, that's cool. But if someone does want to help with their eating, I don't like to use the terms like good food and bad food mm-hmm. with people, because I think that's a lot of the problem with all these eating disorders that are going on. I spent so many years like, can't have that, that's bad. Oh, I gotta have that, that's good. There is no such thing as good and bad food. The only thing that exists in this life is moderation. So as long as you're eating everything in moderation, you can have your little bits and, you know, be healthy and be fit. So I always tell my clients to focus on the things that they need to add to their diet. Don't focus on the things that you have to eliminate or you have to stay away from, because that kind of adds pressure. I start slow with them. You have to add this. You're not eating a lot of that. I see what they're eating regularly. I make little critiques on it and say, okay, add this, add this, add this. And then it's not as daunting of a task for people. They're not, you know, you can't throw too much at anyone at once. And how I got this way was through a lot of baby steps and failures. So I'm just trying to make that easier for everyone else out there. Think about what you can add to your diet, nutrients and foods, and not what you're eliminating. That's a great way to start.
Well, I love how you phrase things. I think context is important in everything we do. So I love how you phrase that. What's your advice, guy like me, right? So mm-hmm. I would love to cook. It looks fun after work. You know, what's your advice, you know, to start cooking? Like, you know, do you start on Blue Apron? Like, do you get grandma and get a coach? Like, how do you just start cooking?
I would say I watch a lot of Food Network. Food Network is what really, like, that's what would get me kind of, I think when you watch, I'm a very visual learner. So like, if I watch something that's kind of, you watch things, you can be inspired and then you can kind of have fun with it, you know, go into your kitchen and see what you have. Like, oh, I have eggs. I have, you know, some broccoli. I have some garlic. Maybe I'll try and like, you know, follow a recipe through, you know, one of the Food Network people or someone on YouTube that you like and kind of just start slow, baby steps. My father always told me that you can always tell a good cook by how they make their eggs. If they mess up eggs, that's it. So start with eggs. Start perfecting eggs. That's your task, Josh. And then build from there.
Typically, you know, I like to give homework to the audience, or to, you know, I don't usually get assigned homework from the guests, but I will send you a video evidence of me taking time on the eggs. And now we spoke about how did you get into MMA? Like, it's just so funny. You've all these disparate interests. It's actually pretty cool. So how did you get into MMA?
And
for our viewers, what is MMA for some of our viewers?
Sure. So MMA is mixed martial arts. A lot of people know it as UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championship, but Ultimate Fighting Championship is just a display of mixed martial arts. There's loads of different mixed martial arts organizations throughout the world. And I got involved with it because I was doing some modeling and I started getting hired as a ring girl for a bunch of different promotions on the island and in the city and in Jersey. And I just started, you know, I got to know the community and I loved it. It was so like, first of all, shows are like amazing. If you've never been to a live fight, you've never been to a live MMA show, like you have to go, even if it's a little show out here in Long Island, they're so much fun. There's the adrenaline rush that you get from the crowd and the people is like nothing else. So I started to fall in love with the scene. And then I working for these promotions, I started taking classes. So I started taking kickboxing, Muay Thai. Muay Thai is Thai boxing. Mm-hmm. So kickboxing and Muay Thai is different, but I say kickboxing because people are more familiar with that term. Sure. So Muay Thai is one of the mixed martial arts that can be in MMA, which is stand-up fighting. So that's striking with your fists, your feet, your knees, your elbows, the art of eight limbs, they call it. And then Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, which is more like wrestling, and it's really cool. It was developed so that, you know, even if you're small, you can kind of get away from your attacker, and it's cool, like body manipulation, stuff like that.
It's so, so, so neat. And so you have all these disparate interests, which I think is important because you don't have to be just one thing in this life. And I'm not sure if you've ever gotten pigeonholed and said, you have to focus on one thing. I see it with parents and young kids, you can only play soccer because, you know, if you're going to get a scholarship to go play soccer, you know, if you're going to play soccer at Duke, you can only play soccer. Like, you know, so what do you say to people who say, you know, you have to focus on one thing in life?
Oh, I don't know where I'd be if I had to only focus on one thing in life. I made jokes for a long time, like up until a few years ago, like, I still don't know what I want to be when I grow up. I think that one of the biggest things, and, you know, I grew up with a mom and dad who were very supportive of me creatively. They were both musicians, and my mom is actually an artist and who does murals and stuff. So they always said to me, you know, do what makes you happy, like a lot of parents say, but also, you know, just, you know, try things. You know, they never pressured me to like go to college right away and do all of that kind of stuff. So I was just kind of like, I don't know what, for lack of a better like way to put it, like in love with the world. I wanted to try everything. And I never let anything hold me back from trying it. A lot of things I said yes to, I agreed to do a play when I was in college. I've never acted a day in my life. I did like a 2-hour stage performance, like 3 months before the opening because one of the cast members dropped out. It's like, throw yourself into things that are going to scare you, or that you think like, maybe no, I don't know. Because the biggest thing is, you know, people who don't take risks, that's what you regret. So try a lot of things and then figure out what you love.
Again, so much. You are really making my day in terms of the sound bites you're giving me that I can use in terms of take a risk and take that leap. And I want to end with the one question I ask every single guest I have on this show, which is, you know, you have achieved and learned so much, you've grown so much. What is the one piece of advice that you would give to your younger self?
Don't be so hard on yourself, and don't talk so negative to yourself all the time, and don't compare yourself to anyone else, because everyone develops and hits their highs at different points in life. Some people might hit their high when they're 13. Some people might hit their high when they're 43. Like, you can't put this timeline on yourself and all this pressure. So definitely just be kinder to myself.
It's a great place to end. Be kind to ourselves so we can become the best versions of ourselves. You are so inspiring in so many ways. I will cook tomorrow and I'm going to the gym tomorrow too, but I thank you for using your platform for good, for helping people live healthy and fulfilled lives. And we're excited to see where your next chapter takes you. We know there's great things in store. Xandra, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Josh.
Thanks so much for tuning in. And thank you to Xandra Fit for an amazing conversation. Make sure to click subscribe to our podcast and check us out on Instagram and Facebook for videos and bonus features. I'd also love to hear your questions and comments. Feel free to shoot me an email at josh@joshlafazan.com. I'm legislator Josh Lafazan, and thanks for joining us for Java with Josh.